much follow me anywhere. We caught 2 more strigoi that night and managed to repeat the procedure. The results were the same. Lots of insults in Russian, no new information. Once I was convinced a strigoi had nothing to offer us, I'd let the unpromised go in for the kill. They loved it, but after that 3rd one, I found myself growing weary both mentally and physically. I told the group we were going to go home. And then, while cutting around the back of a factory, I sensed a 4th strigoi. We jumped him. Another scuffle occurred, but we eventually managed to pin him as we had the others. "Go ahead," I told Dennis. "You know what to..."
"I'm going to rip your throat out,"
the strigoi snarled. Whoa, this one spoke English. Dennis opened his mouth to begin the interrogation, but I shook my head. "I'll take over." Like the other strigoi, he swore and struggled, even with the stake against his neck, making it hard for me to talk. "Look," I said, growing impatient and tired. "Just tell us what we need to know. We're looking for a dompier named Dmitry Belikov."
"I know him," the strigoi's voice was smug. "And he's no dompier."
Without realizing it, I'd called Dmitry a dompier. I was tired and had slipped up. No wonder this strigoi was so pleased to talk. He assumed we didn't know about Dmitry turning. And like any arrogant strigoi, he was happy to tell us more, clearly in the hopes of causing us pain.
"Your friend has been awakened. He stalks the night with us now, drinking the blood of foolish girls like you."
In a split second, 1,000 thoughts raced through my head. Holy crap! I'd come to Russia thinking it would be easy to find Dmitry. I'd had those hopes dashed in his hometown, nearly causing me to give up, and I'd swung the other way, resigning myself to the near impossibility of my task. The thought that I might be close to something here was staggering.
"You're lying," I said. "You've never seen him."
"I see him all the time. I've killed with him."
My stomach twisted, and it had nothing to do with the strigoi's proximity. "Don't think about Dmitry killing people. Don't think about Dmitry killing people." I said the words over and over in my head, forcing myself to stay calm.
"If that's true," I hissed back, "then I've got a message for you to deliver to him. Tell him Rose Hathaway is looking for him."
"I'm not your errand boy," he said, glowering.
My stake slashed out, drawing blood, and he grimaced in pain.
"You're anything I want you to be. Now go tell Dmitry what I told you. Rose Hathaway. Rose Hathaway is looking for him. Say it."
I pressed the point to his neck.
"Say my name so I know you'll remember."
"I'll remember it so I can kill you."
The stake pressed harder, spilling blood.
"Rose Hathaway," he said.
He spit at me, but missed. Satisfied, I leaned back. Dennis watched me, expectantly, stake poised and ready.
"Now we kill him?"
I shook my head. "Now we let him go." Chapter 17. Convincing them to release a strigoi, particularly when we had him trapped, wasn't easy. My questioning hadn't made sense to them either, but they'd gone along with it. Letting a strigoi go? That was really crazy, even for the unpromised. They exchanged uneasy glances with one another, and I wondered if they'd disobey. In the end, my harshness and authority won out. They wanted me as their leader and put their faith in my actions, no matter how insane they seemed. Of course, once we did let the strigoi go, we had the new problem of making sure he actually went. At first, he started to attack again, and then, realizing he'd probably get overwhelmed, he finally skulked off. He gave us one last menacing look as he disappeared into the darkness. I didn't think being taken down by a group of teenagers had done a lot for his self-esteem. He gave me in particular a look of hatred, and I shuddered at the idea of him knowing my name. There was nothing to be done about it now. I could only hope my plan had a chance of working. Dennis and the others got over me letting the strigoi go once we made a few other kills that week. We fell into a routine, investigating clubs and dangerous parts of town, relying on my senses to tell us when danger was near. It was funny to me how much the group soon began to rely on my leadership.
They claimed they wanted no part of the Guardian's rules and authority, but they responded surprisingly well to me telling them what to do. Well, more or less. Every once in a while, I'd see a bit of that unhinged recklessness. One of them would try to play hero, underestimate a Strigoi, or go in without the rest of us. Arthur nearly ended up with a concussion that way. As the largest of all of us, he'd gotten a bit cocky and was therefore caught off guard when a Strigoi threw him into a wall. It had been a sobering moment for all of us. For a few agonizing moments, I'd feared Arthur was dead, and that it was my fault as their leader. One of Sydney's alchemists had come, though I'd made sure not to be around, lest Abe find me, and had treated Arthur. The guy said Arthur would be fine with some bed rest, meaning he had to stop hunting for a while. It was hard for him to do, and I had to yell at him when he tried to follow us one night, reminding him of all their friends who had died before because of such stupidity. Out in the human world, Dampiers tended to run on human schedules. Now I put myself on a nocturnal schedule, just like I'd been on at the academy. The others followed suit, except for Tamara, since she had a day job. I didn't want to be asleep during the time Strigoi prowled the streets. I had called Sydney each time we left a kill, and word had to be getting around in the Strigoi community that someone was doing a lot of damage. And if the Strigoi we'd released had carried my message, some of those Strigoi could specifically come looking for me. As days passed, our kills dropped a little, making me think the Strigoi were indeed being cautious now. I couldn't decide if that was a good or bad thing, but I urged the others to be extra careful. They were beginning to revere me as a goddess, but I took no satisfaction in their adoration. My heart still ached from all that had happened with Lyssa and Dimitri. I wrapped myself up in my task, trying only to think of working the Strigoi community to get closer to Dimitri. But when we weren't out hunting Strigoi, I had a lot of downtime with nothing to do. And so I kept visiting Lyssa. I'd known there were a lot of kids, like Mia, who lived at the royal court because their parents had jobs there. I didn't quite realize how many there were, though. Avery naturally knew them all, and to no one's surprise, at least not mine, most of them were spoiled and rich. The rest of Lyssa's visit had been a series of other functions and formal parties. The more she listened to Royal Moroi talk business, the more it irritated her. She saw the same abuses of power she'd noted before, the same unfair way of distributing guardians like they were property. The controversial issue of whether Moroi should learn to fight alongside the guardians was also still a hot topic. Most of the people Lyssa ran into at court were of the old-school mentality. Let guardians fight, and Moroi stay protected. After seeing the results of that policy, and the successes that had happened when people like Christian and I tried to change it, hearing the selfishness among the Moroi elite enraged Lyssa. She welcomed her escapes from these events whenever she could, anxious to run wild with Avery. Avery was always able to find people to hang out with and attend parties of a much different nature than Tatiana's. Stifling court politics never came up at these parties, but there were still plenty of other things to drag Lyssa's mood down. In particular, Lyssa felt her guilt, anger, and depression over me spiraling deeper and deeper. She'd seen enough of Spirit's effects on her moods to recognize potential warning signs, though she hadn't been actively using Spirit while on this trip. Regardless of the mood's cause, she still continued to do her best to seek distraction and drown her depression. "Watch it," warned Avery one evening. She and Lyssa were at a party the night before they had to fly back to the academy. A lot of those who lived at court had permanent housing, and this party was at the townhouse of some Zelski who served as an aide on a committee Lyssa didn't know. Lyssa didn't really know their host either, but that didn't matter, save that his parents were out of town. "Watch what?" asked Lyssa, staring around the sights. The townhouse had a courtyard out back, lit up by tiki torches and strings of twinkling lights. There were drinks and food in full force, and some Moroi guy had a guitar out and was trying to impress girls with his musical skills, which were non-existent. In fact, his music was so awful that he might have discovered a new way to kill Strigoi. He was cute enough, though, that his admirers didn't seem to care what he played. "This," said Avery, pointing at Lyssa's martini. "Are you keeping track of how many of those you're taking down?"
"Not from what I can tell," said Adrian. He was sprawled on a lounge chair nearby, a drink in his own hand.
Lyssa felt a bit amateur compared to them. While Avery was still her wild and flirtatious self, she didn't have the crazed or stupid air of someone completely trashed. Lissa didn't know how much the other girl had been drinking, but it was presumably a lot since Avery always had a drink in hand. Likewise, Adrian never seemed to be without a beverage, the effects of which mostly mellowed him out. Lissa supposed they had a lot more experience than her. She'd gone soft over the years.
"I'm fine," lied Lissa, who was watching her surroundings spin a little and seriously contemplating joining some girls dancing on a table across the courtyard.
Avery's lips quirked into a smile, though her eyes showed a bit of worry.
"Sure, just don't get sick or anything. That kind of thing gets around, and the last thing we need is everyone knowing that the Dragomir girl can't hold her liquor. Your family has a fierce reputation to maintain."
Lissa downed the drink.
"Somehow I doubt alcohol consumption is part of my family's illustrious ancestry."
Avery pushed Adrian over and laid down next to him on the lounge chair.
"Hey, you'd be surprised. In 10 years, this group will be your peers on the council. And you'll be trying to pass some resolution and they'll be like, 'Remember that time she got trashed and threw up at that party?'"
Lissa and Adrian both laughed at that. Lissa didn't think she was going to get sick, but like everything else, she would worry about it later. The bright point of all this was that drinking was helping numb the memories of what had happened earlier in the day. Tatiana had introduced her to her future guardians, a seasoned guy named Grant and the young lady who was named Serena. They had been nice enough, but their parallels to Dimitri and me had been overwhelming. Taking them on had seemed like a betrayal to us, yet Lissa had simply nodded and thanked Tatiana. Later, Lissa had learned that Serena had originally been lined up to be the guardian for a girl she'd known her entire life. The girl wasn't royal, but sometimes, depending on guardian numbers, even non-royals got assigned guardians, though never more than one. When positions for Lissa's protection opened up, however, Tatiana had pulled Serena from the job with her friend. Serena had smiled and told Lissa it didn't matter. Duty came first, she said, and she was happy to serve her. Yet Lissa felt bad, knowing it had to have been hard on both girls, and terribly unfair. But there it was again, an unfair balance of power with no one to really keep it in line. Leaving that encounter, Lissa had cursed her own meekness. "If she hadn't had the courage to follow me," she thought, "she should have at least put her foot down and demanded that Tatiana give her my mother instead. Then Serena could have gone back to her friend, and there'd be one friendship still left intact in the world." The martinis simultaneously seemed to numb the pain and make her feel worse, which honestly made no sense to Lissa. "Whatever," she thought. And when she caught a glimpse of a server passing by, she waved him over to order more.
"Hey, can I... Ambrose?"
She stared in surprise at the guy standing before her. If there'd been a swimsuit calendar for hottest Dompier guys, this one would have been the cover model. Aside from Dimitri, but then, I was biased. This guy's name was Ambrose, and she and I had met him on our trip there together. He had deeply tanned skin and well-formed muscles underneath his gray button-down shirt. He was a particular oddity at court, a Dompier who'd rejected guardian service and performed all sorts of tasks here, like giving massages and, if rumor was true, having romantic encounters with the queen. That one still made me cringe, and I'd run into some pretty disgusting things in my life.
"Princess Dragomir," he said, flashing her one of his perfect white grins. "An unexpected surprise."
"How have you been?"
she asked, genuinely happy to see him.
"Good, good. I have the best job in the world, after all. And you?"
"Great,"
she replied. Ambrose paused, eyeing her. He didn't drop that gorgeous grin, but Lissa could tell he didn't agree with her. She could see the disapproval in his face. Avery accusing her of drinking too much was one thing, but some pretty Dompier servant? Unacceptable. Lissa's demeanor grew cold, and she held out her glass.
"I need another martini," she said,
her voice as haughty as that of any perfect royal. He sensed the change in her, and his friendly smile turned to one of polite indifference.
"Right away."
He gave her a small bow and headed off to the bar.
"Geez," said Avery, watching admiringly as he walked away. "Why didn't you introduce us to your friend?" "He's not my friend," snapped Lissa. "He's nobody."
"Agreed," said Adrian, putting an arm around Avery. Why look elsewhere when you've got the best right here?
If I had known any better, I'd have sworn there was a hint of legitimate jealousy underneath his jovial tone.
Didn't I go out of my way to bring you to breakfast with my aunt?
Avery gave him a lazy smile.
That's a good start. You've still got a ways to go to impress me, Ivashkov.
Her gaze drifted over Lissa's head and turned surprised.
Hey, jailbait's here.
Mia, with Jill in tow, came striding through the garden, indifferent to the shocked looks she received. The two of them were clearly out of place.
Hey, said Mia when she reached Lissa's group. My dad just got called away, and I have to go with him. I've got to give Jill back.
No problem,
said Lissa automatically, though she clearly wasn't happy about Jill being there. Lissa still kept wondering if Christian had some special interest in her.
Everything okay?
Yeah, just business.
Mia made her farewells to everyone and left the party as quickly as she'd come, rolling her eyes at the other royals' sneers in shock as she passed. Lissa turned her attention to Jill, who had sat gingerly in a nearby chair and was staring around her in wonder.
How's it been? Did you have fun with Mia?
Jill turned back to Lissa, face brightening.
Oh yeah, she's really great. She's done so much work with water, it's crazy. And she taught me a few fighting moves too. I can throw a right hook, although not very hard.
Ambrose returned with Lissa's drink. He gave it to her wordlessly and softened a bit when he saw Jill.
You want anything?
She shook her head.
No, thanks.
Adrian was watching Jill carefully.
You okay here? Do you want me to take you back to guest housing?
Like before, his intentions weren't romantic in the least. He seemed to regard her as a little sister, which I thought was cute. I hadn't thought him capable of that kind of protective behavior. She shook her head again.
It's okay. I don't want you to have to leave, unless...
Her expression grew worried.
Do you want me to go?
Nah, said Adrian. It's nice to have someone responsible around in the midst of all this madness. You should get yourself some food if you're hungry.
You're so motherly,
teased Avery, echoing my thoughts. For whatever reason, Lissa took Adrian's responsible comment personally, like he was directly slamming her. I didn't think that was the case at all, but she wasn't really thinking all that clearly. Deciding she wanted some food herself, she got up and wandered over to the table in the courtyard's garden that had trays of appetizers on it. Well, it had earlier. Now the table was being used by the dancing girls Lissa had noticed before. Someone had cleared space by moving all the trays of food to the ground. Lissa leaned over and picked up a mini sandwich, watching the girls and wondering how they could find any sort of beat in that royal guy's horrible music. One of the girls spotted Lissa and grinned. She extended a hand.
Hey, come on up.
Lissa had met her once, but couldn't recall her name. Dancing suddenly seemed like a great idea. Lissa finished the sandwich and, drink in hand, allowed herself to be pulled up. This got a few cheers from people gathered around. Lissa discovered that the crappy music was irrelevant and found herself getting into it. Her and the other girls' moves varied from overtly sexual to mockeries of disco. It was all fun, and Lissa wondered if Avery would claim this would haunt her in 10 years, too. After a while, she and the others actually attempted some synchronized moves. They started by swaying their arms in the air and then moved on to some chorus line kicks. Those kicks proved disastrous. A misstep, Lissa was wearing heels, suddenly sent her over the table's edge. She lost the drink and nearly collapsed before a pair of arms caught her and kept her upright.
My hero,
she muttered. Then she got a good look at her savior's face.
Aaron?
Lissa's ex-boyfriend, and the first guy she'd ever slept with, looked down at her with a smile and released her once he seemed certain she could stand. Blonde-haired and blue-eyed, Aaron was handsome in a surfer kind of way. I couldn't help but wonder what would have happened if Mia had seen him. She, Aaron, and Lissa had once been involved in a triangle worthy of any soap opera.
What are you doing here? We thought you disappeared,
Lissa said. Aaron had left the academy a few months ago.
I'm going to school out in New Hampshire, he replied. We're here visiting family.
Well, it's great to see you, said Lissa.
Things hadn't ended well between them, but in her current state, she meant her words. She'd had enough booze to think it was great to see everyone at the party.
You too,
he said.
You look amazing.
His words struck her more than she would have expected, probably because everyone else here had implied that she looked trashed and irresponsible. And break up or no, she couldn't help but recall how attractive she'd once found him. Honestly, she still found him attractive. She just didn't love him anymore.
You should stay in touch, she said. Let us know what's going on.
For a moment, she wondered if she should have said that, in light of having a boyfriend. Then she dismissed her worries. There was nothing wrong with hanging out with other guys, particularly since Christian hadn't cared enough to come with her on this trip.
I'd like that, Aaron said.
There was something in his eyes she found pleasurably disconcerting.
I don't suppose, though, that I could get a goodbye kiss, seeing as I rescued you and all.
The idea was preposterous. Then, after a moment, Lissa laughed. What did it matter? Christian was the one she loved, and a kiss between friends would mean nothing. Looking up, she let Aaron lean down and cup her face. Their lips met, and there was no denying it. The kiss lasted a bit longer than a friendly one. When it ended, Lissa found herself smiling like a dazed schoolgirl, which, technically, she was.
See you around,
she said, heading back toward her friends.
Avery wore a chastising look, but it wasn't over Aaron and the kiss.
Are you crazy? You nearly broke your leg. You can't do that kind of thing.
You're supposed to be the fun one, pointed out Lissa.
It wasn't a big deal.
Fun isn't the same as stupid, Avery retorted, face serious. You can't go do stupid shit like that. I think we should get you home.
I'm fine, said Lissa.
She stubbornly looked away from Avery and instead focused on some guys who were doing shots of tequila. They were having some sort of competition, and half of them looked ready to pass out.
Define fine, said Adrian Riley. Yet he looked concerned, too.
I'm fine, Lissa repeated.
Her gaze snapped back to Avery.
I didn't get hurt at all.
She'd expected grief about Aaron and was surprised they hadn't given it to her, which made it even more surprising when it came from another source.
You kissed that guy,
exclaimed Jill, leaning forward. Her face was aghast, and she displayed none of her usual reticence.
It was nothing, said Lissa,
who was irked to have Jill reprimanding her of all people.
Certainly none of your business.
But you're with Christian. How could you do that to him?
Relax, jailbait, said Avery. A drunken kiss is nothing compared to a drunken fall. God knows I've kissed plenty of guys drunk.
And yet I'd remain unkissed tonight, mused Adrian, with a shake of his head.
It doesn't matter.
Jill was really worked up. She'd grown to like and respect Christian.
You cheated on him.
With those words, Jill might as well have practiced her right hook on Lissa.
I did not, Lissa exclaimed. Don't drag your crush on him into this and imagine things that aren't there.
I didn't imagine that kiss, said Jill, flushing. That kiss is the least of our worries, sighed Avery. I'm serious. Just let it go for now, you guys. We'll talk in the morning.
But,
began Jill.
You heard her. Let it go,
a new voice growled. Reed Lazar had appeared out of nowhere and was looming over Jill, face as hard and scary as ever. Jill's eyes went wide.
I'm just telling the truth.
I had to admire her courage here, considering her normally timid nature.
You're pissing everyone off,
said Reed, leaning closer and clenching his fists.
And you're pissing me off.
I was pretty sure this was the most I'd ever heard him say. I tended to kind of think of him as a caveman, stringing three-word sentences together.
Whoa!
Adrian leapt up and rushed to Jill's side.
You need to let this go. What? Are you going to start a fight with some girl?
Reed turned his glare on Adrian.
Stay out of this. The hell I will. You're crazy.
If anyone had asked me to make up a list of people most likely to risk a fight in defense of a lady's honor, Adrian Ivashkov would have been low on that list. Yet there he stood, face hard and hands sitting protectively on Jill's shoulder. I was in awe and impressed.
Reed,
cried Avery. She too had risen and now stood on Jill's other side.
She didn't mean anything. Back off.
The two siblings stood there,
eyes locked in some kind of silent showdown. Avery wore the harshest look I'd ever seen on her, and at last he glowered and stepped back.
Fine, whatever.
The group stared in amazement as he walked abruptly away. The music was so loud that only a few of the partygoers had overheard the argument. They stopped and stared, and Avery looked embarrassed as she sank back in her chair. Adrian still stood by Jill.
What the hell was that?
Adrian demanded.
I don't know, Avery admitted. He gets weird and overprotective sometimes.
She gave Jill an apologetic smile.
I'm really sorry.
Adrian shook his head.
I think it's time for us to go.
Even in her drunken state, Lisa had to agree. The confrontation with Reed had shocked her into soberness, and she was suddenly uneasily evaluating her actions tonight. The glittering lights and fancy cocktails of the party had lost their charm. The drunken antics of the other royals seemed clumsy and stupid. She had a feeling she might regret this party tomorrow.
Once back in my own head, I felt fear set in.
Okay. Something was very wrong with Lisa, and no one else seemed to notice it.
Well, not to the extent they should have.
Adrian and Avery did seem concerned, but I had the feeling they were blaming her behavior on the drinking. Lisa was still reminding me a lot of how she'd been when we'd first returned to St. Vladimir's when Spirit had been seizing her and messing with her mind. Except, I knew enough about myself now to realize that my anger and fixation on punishing Strigoi was being influenced by Spirit's dark side, too. That meant I was draining it away from her. It should have been leading Lisa, not building up. So what was wrong with her? Where was this short-tempered, crazy, and jealous persona coming from? Was Spirit's darkness simply growing in intensity so that it spread to both of us? Were we splitting it?
Rose.
Huh. I glanced up from where I'd been staring blankly at the TV. Dennis was looking down at me, his cell phone in his hand.
Tamara had to work late. She's ready to go now, but...
He nodded toward the window. The sun was almost down. The sky purple with only a little orange on the horizon. Tamara worked within walking distance, and while there probably wasn't any real danger, I didn't want her out alone after sunset. I stood up.
Come on, we'll go get her.
To Lev and Arthur, I said, "You guys can stay here." Dennis and I walked the half mile to the small office where Tamara worked. She did assorted clerical tasks, like filing and copying, and there had apparently been some project that kept her there late tonight. We met her at the door and walked back to the apartment without incident, talking animatedly about our hunting plans for the evening. When we reached Tamara's building, I heard a strange wailing across the street. We all turned, and Dennis chuckled.
Good God, it's that crazy woman again, I muttered.
Tamara didn't live in a bad part of town, but, as in any city, there were homeless people and panhandlers. The woman we watched was almost as ancient as Yeva, and she regularly walked up and down the street, muttering to herself. Today, she lay on her back on the sidewalk, making strange noises while waving her limbs like a turtle.
Is she hurt? I asked.
Nope, just crazy, said Dennis.
He and Tamara turned to go inside, but some soft part of me couldn't abandon her. I sighed. I'll be right in. The street was quiet, aside from the old lady, and I cut across without fear of traffic. Reaching the woman, I held out my hand to help her out, trying not to think about how dirty hers was. Like Dennis had said, she merely appeared to be in crazy mode today. She wasn't hurt. She'd apparently just decided to lie down. I tossed the word crazy around a lot when it came to Lisa and me, but this was truly crazy. I really, really hoped Spirit never took us this far. The homeless lady looked surprised at the help but took my hand and began talking excitedly in Russian. When she tried to hug me in gratitude, I stepped back and held up my hands in the international back off signal. She did indeed back off, but continued chatting happily. She grabbed the sides of her long coat and held them out like a ballroom skirt and began spinning around and singing. I laughed, surprised that in my grim world, this would cheer me up. I started to cross back over to Tamara's place. The old woman stopped dancing and began talking happily to me again.
Sorry, I have to go, I told her.
It didn't seem to register. Then she froze mid-sentence. Her expression gave me warning, only half a millisecond before my nausea did. In one fluid motion, I spun around to face what was behind me, pulling my stake out as I moved. There was a Strigoi there, tall and imposing, having sneaked up while I was distracted. Stupid. Stupid. I'd refused to let Tamara walk home alone, but I'd never even considered danger right outside my... No. I wasn't sure if I said the word or thought it. It didn't matter. The only thing that mattered just then was what my eyes saw before me. Or rather, what my eyes thought they saw. Because surely, surely I had to be imagining this. It couldn't be real. Not after all this time. Dimitri. I knew him instantly, even though he'd... changed. I think in a crowd of a million people, I would have recognized him. The connection between us would allow nothing else, and after being deprived of him for so long, I drank in every feature. The dark, chin-length hair, worn loose tonight and curling slightly around his face. The familiar set of lips, quirked now in an amused yet chilling smile. He even wore the duster he always wore, the long leather coat that could have come straight out of a cowboy movie. And then, there were the Strigoi features. His dark eyes, the eyes I loved, ringed in red. The pale, pale, death-white skin. In life, his complexion had been as tanned as mine, thanks to so much time outdoors. If he opened his mouth, I knew I'd see fangs. My whole assessment took place in the blink of an eye. I'd reacted fast when I'd felt him, faster than he probably expected. I still had the element of surprise, my stake poised and ready. It was perfectly lined up with his heart. I could tell then and there that I could make the hit faster than he could defend. But the eyes. Oh, God, the eyes. Even with that sickening red ring around his pupils, his eyes still reminded me of the Dimitri I'd known. The look in his eyes, the soulless, malicious gleam that was nothing like him. But there was just enough resemblance to stir my heart, to overwhelm my senses and feelings. My stake was ready. All I had to do was keep swinging to make the kill. I had momentum on my side. But I couldn't. I just needed a few more seconds. A few more seconds to drink him in before I killed him. And that's when he spoke. Rosa. His voice had that same wonderful lowness, the same accent. It was all just colder. You forgot my first lesson. Don't hesitate. I just barely saw his fist striking out toward my head. And then, I saw nothing at all.
Chapter 18. Unsurprisingly, I woke up with a headache. For a few addled seconds, I had no idea what had happened or where I was. As drowsiness wore off, the events on the street came slamming back to me. I sat upright, all of my defenses kicking into action, despite the slight wooziness in my head. Time to figure out where I was now. I sat up on an enormous bed in a darkened room. No, not just a room, more like a suite or a studio. I'd thought the hotel in St. Petersburg was opulent, but this blew it away. The half of the studio I sat in contained the bed and usual bedroom accessories, a dresser, nightstands, etc. The other half looked like a living room area, with a couch and a television. Shelves were built into the walls, all of them filled with books. Off to my right was a short hall with a door at the end, probably a bathroom. On my other side was a large picture window, tinted as Maroi windows often were. This one had more tint than any I'd ever seen. It was almost solid black, nearly impossible to see through. Only the fact that I could differentiate the sky from the horizon, after a fair amount of squinting, let me know it was daytime out there. I slid off the bed, my senses on high alert as I tried to assess my danger. My stomach felt fine. There were no Strigoi in the area. That didn't necessarily rule out some other person, however. I couldn't take anything for granted. Doing so was what had gotten me in trouble on the street. There was no time to ponder that, though. Not quite yet. If I did, my resolve here was going to falter. Sliding off the bed, I reached into my coat pocket for the stake. Gone. Of course.
I saw nothing else nearby that would pass as a weapon, meaning I'd have to rely on my own body to do my fighting. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught sight of a light switch on the wall. I flipped it on and froze, waiting to see what, or who, the overhead lights would unveil. Nothing unusual. No one else. Immediately, I did the first obvious thing and checked the door. It was locked, as I'd expected, and the only way of opening it was a numeric keypad. Plus, it was heavy and made of what looked like steel. It reminded me of a fire door. There was no getting past it, so I turned back around to continue my exploration. It was actually kind of ironic. A lot of my classes had gone over detailed ways of checking out a place. I always hated those. I'd wanted to learn about fighting. Now it appeared those lessons that had seemed useless at the time had real purpose. The light had brought the suite's objects into sharper relief. The bed was covered in an ivory satin duvet, filled to maximum fluffiness with down. Creeping over to the living room, I saw that the TV was nice. Really nice. Large screen plasma. It looked brand new. The couches were nice too, covered in matte green leather. It was an unusual color choice for leather, but it worked. All of the furniture in the place, tables, desk, dresser, was made of a smooth, polished black wood. In a corner of the living room, I saw a small refrigerator. Kneeling down, I opened it up to find bottled water and juice, assorted fruits, and bags of perfectly cut cheeses. On top of the refrigerator was more snack-type food, nuts, crackers, and some type of glazed pastry. My stomach growled at the sight of it, but no way was I going to eat anything in this place. The bathroom was done in the same style as the rest of the studio. The shower and large jacuzzi tub were made of black polished marble, and little soaps and shampoos lined the counter. A larger mirror hung over the sink, except it wasn't actually hanging. It was embedded so tightly into the wall that there was absolutely no way it could be removed. The material was strange, too. It looked more like reflective metal than glass. At first I thought that was strange, until I raced back out to the main room and looked around. There was absolutely nothing here that could be turned into a weapon. The TV was too big to move or break, short of cracking the screen, which looked like it was made of some high-tech plastic. There was no glass in any of the tables. The shelves were embedded, the bottles in the refrigerator were all plastic, and the window... I ran over to it, feeling along its edges. Like the mirror, it was fitted perfectly into the wall. There were no panes. It was one smooth piece. Squinting again, I finally got a detailed view of my outer surroundings and saw nothing. The land appeared to be rolling plains with only a few scattered trees. It reminded me of the wilderness I'd traveled while going to Baia. I was no longer in Novosibirsk, apparently, and peering down, I saw that I was fairly high up. Fourth floor, maybe. Whatever it was too high to jump without breaking a limb. Still, I had to take some sort of action. I couldn't just sit here. I picked up the desk's chair and slammed it into the window, and achieved little effect on either the chair or the glass. "Jesus Christ," I muttered. I tried three more times and still had no luck. It was like they were both made of steel. Maybe the glass was some kind of bulletproof industrial strength stuff, and the chair... Well, hell if I knew. It was all one piece of wood and showed no signs of splintering, even after what I'd just put it through. But since I'd spent my whole life doing things that weren't that reasonable, I kept trying to break the glass. I was on my fifth try when my stomach warned me of a Strigoi's approach. Spinning around, I kept a hold of the chair and charged the door. It opened, and I slammed into the intruder, with the chair's legs pointing out. It was Dimitri. Those same conflicted feelings I'd felt on the street returned to me. Love mingled with terror. This time, I pushed through the love, not flinching in my attack. Not that it did much good. Hitting him was like hitting the window. He shoved me back and I staggered, still holding onto the chair. I kept my balance and charged once more. This time, when we collided, he grabbed a hold of the chair and ripped it from my hands. He then tossed it into the wall, like it weighed nothing. Without that meager weapon, it was back to relying on my own body's strength. I'd been doing it for the last couple of weeks with our Strigoi questioning. This should have been the same. Of course, I'd had four other people then as backup, and none of those Strigoi had been Dimitri.
Even as a Dampier, he'd been hard to beat. Now he was just as skilled, only faster and stronger. He also knew all my moves, seeing as he'd taught them to me. It was almost impossible to surprise him. But just like with the window, I couldn't stay inactive. I was trapped in a room. The fact that it was a big, luxurious room didn't matter. With a Strigoi. A Strigoi. That's what I had to keep telling myself. There was a Strigoi in here, not Dimitri. Everything I'd told Dennis and the others applied here. Be smart. Be vigilant. Defend yourself.
Rose, he said, deflecting one of my kicks effortlessly. You're wasting time. Stop.
Oh, that voice. Dimitri's voice. The voice I heard when I fell asleep at night. The voice that had once told me he loved me.
No, it's not him. Dimitri is gone. This is a monster.
Desperately, I tried to think of how I could win here. I even thought of the ghosts I'd summoned on the road. Mark had said I could do that in moments of wild emotion and that they'd fight for me. This was as wild as emotion could get, yet I couldn't seem to call them. I honestly had no clue how I'd done it before, and all the wishing in the world couldn't make it happen now. Damn, what good were terrifying powers if I couldn't use them to my advantage? Instead, I pulled the DVD player off its shelf, cords ripping from the wall. It wasn't much of a weapon, but I was desperate now. I heard a strange primal battle scream, and some distant part of me realized I was making it. Again, I ran at Dimitri, swinging the DVD player as hard as I could. It probably would have hurt a little if it had hit him. It didn't. He intercepted it again, taking it from me and throwing it down. It smashed to pieces on the floor. In the same motion, he grabbed a hold of my arms to stop me from hitting or reaching for something else. His grip was hard, like it could break my bones, but I kept struggling. He tried reason again.
I'm not going to hurt you, Rosa. Please stop.
Rosa, the old nickname. The name he'd first called me when we'd fallen prey to Victor's lust charm, both of us wrapped naked in each other's arms. This isn't the Dimitri you knew. My hands were incapacitated, so I struck out with my legs and feet as best I could. It didn't do much. Without full use of the rest of my body for balance, I had no force to throw into my kicks. For his part, he looked more annoyed than truly concerned or angry. With a loud sigh, he grabbed me by the shoulders and flipped me around, pressing me against the wall and immobilizing me with the full force of his body. I struggled a little, but was as pinned as the Strigoi had been when the others and I had gone hunting. The universe had a sick sense of humor.
Stop fighting me.
His breath was warm against my neck, his body right up against mine. I knew his mouth was only a couple inches away.
I'm not going to hurt you.
I gave another fruitless shove. My breath was coming into ragged gasps, and my head injury throbbed. You'll have to understand if I have a hard time believing that.
If I wanted you dead, you'd be dead. Now if you're going to keep fighting, I'll have to tie you up. If you stop, I'll let you stay unrestrained.
Aren't you afraid I'll escape?
No.
His voice was perfectly calm, and chills ran down my spine.
I am not.
We stood like that for almost a minute, deadlocked. My mind raced. It was true that he probably would have killed me already if that were his intent, yet that gave me no reason to believe I was even remotely safe. Nonetheless, we were at a draw in this fight. Okay, draw wasn't entirely accurate. I was at a draw. He was toying with me. My head was throbbing where his blow had landed, and this pointless fighting would only take a further toll. I had to regain my strength in order to find a way to escape, if I lived that long. I also needed to stop thinking about how close our bodies were. After our months of being so careful not to touch, this much contact was heady. I relaxed in his hold. Okay. He hesitated before letting me go, probably wondering if he could trust me. The whole moment reminded me of when we'd been together in the little cabin on the periphery of the Academy's grounds. I'd been raging and upset, brimming with spirit's darkness. Dimitri had held me down then, too, and talked me out of that horrible state. We had kissed, then his hands had lifted my shirt, and no, not here. I couldn't think about that here. Dimitri finally eased up, releasing me from the wall.
I turned around, and all my instincts wanted to lash out and attack him again. Sternly, I reminded myself to bide my time so that I could gain more strength and information. Even though he'd let me go, he hadn't moved away. We were only a foot apart. Against my better judgment, I found myself taking him in again, like a hat on the street. How could he be the same, and yet so different? I tried my best not to focus on the similarities. His hair, the difference in our heights, the shape of his face. Instead, I concentrated on the Strigoi features. The red in his eyes and pallor of his skin. I was so fixated on my task that it took me a moment to realize he wasn't saying anything either. He was studying me intently, like his eyes could look right through me. I shivered. It almost seemed as though I captivated him the same way he captivated me. That was impossible, though. Strigoi didn't possess those kinds of emotions, and besides, the thought of him still having any affection for me was probably just wishful thinking on my part. His face had always been hard to read, and now it was overlaid with a mask of cunning and coldness that made it truly impossible to know what was on his mind.
"Why did you come here?"
he asked at last. "Because you hit me on the head and dragged me here. If I was going to die, I was going to go in true Rose style." The old Dimitri would have cracked a smile or given an exasperated sigh. This one remained impassive.
"That's not what I meant, and you know it. Why are you here?"
His voice was low and dangerous. I thought Abe was scary, but there was no competition at all. Even Zmei would have backed off. "In Siberia? I came to find you."
"I came here to get away from you."
I was so shocked that I said something utterly ridiculous. "Why? Because I might kill you?" The look he gave me showed that he thought that was indeed a ridiculous thing to say.
"No. So we wouldn't be in this situation. Now we are, and the choice is inevitable."
I wasn't entirely sure what this situation was. "Well, you can let me go if you want to avoid it." He stepped away and walked toward the living room without looking back at me. I was tempted to try to do a sneak attack on him, but something told me I'd probably only make it about 4 feet before getting backhanded. He sat down in one of the luxurious leather armchairs, folding his 6'7" frame up as gracefully as he'd always done. God, why did he have to be so contradictory? He had the old Dimitri's habits mixed with those of a monster. I stayed where I was, huddled against the wall.
"Not possible anymore. Not after seeing you now."
Again, he studied me. It felt strange. Part of me responded with excitement to the intensity of his gaze, loving the way he surveyed my body from head to toe. The other part of me felt dirty, like slime or muck was oozing over my skin as he studied me.
"You're still as beautiful as I remember, Rosa. Not that I should have expected anything different."
I didn't know what to say to that. I'd never really had a conversation with a Strigoi, short of trading a few insults and threats in the midst of a fight. The nearest I'd come was when I'd been held captive by Isaiah. I actually had been tied up then, and most of the talking had been about him killing me. This, well, it wasn't like that, but it was still definitely creepy. I crossed my arms over my chest and backed up against the wall. It was the closest I could come to some semblance of a defense. He tilted his head, watching me carefully. A shadow fell across his face in such a way that it made the red in his eyes hard to see. Instead, they looked dark, just like they used to. Endless and wonderful, filled with love and bravery.
"You can sit down," he said.
"I'm fine over here."
"Is there anything else you want?"
"For you to let me go?" For a moment, I thought I saw a bit of that old wryness in his face, the kind he'd get when I made jokes. Studying him, I decided I'd imagined it.
"No, Rosa. I meant, do you need anything here? Different food, books, entertainment?"
I stared incredulously. "You make it sound like some sort of luxury hotel."
"It is, to a certain extent. I can speak to Galina, and she'll get you anything you wish."
"Galina?" Dimitri's lips turned up in a smile. Well, kind of. I think his thoughts were fond, but the smile conveyed none of that. It was chilling, dark, and full of secrets. Only my refusal to show weakness before him stopped me from cringing.
"Galina is my old instructor," Back from when I was in school.
She's Strigoi?
Yes. She was awakened several years ago, in a fight in Prague. She's relatively young for Strigoi, but she's risen in power. All of this is hers.
Dmitri gestured around us. And you live with her? I asked, curious in spite of myself. I wondered exactly what kind of relationship they had, and to my surprise, I felt jealous. Not that I had reason to. He was a Strigoi, beyond me now, and it wouldn't be the first time a teacher and student had gotten together.
I work for her. She was another reason I returned here when I was awakened. I knew she was Strigoi, and I wanted her guidance.
And you wanted to get away from me? That was the other reason, right? His only answer was a nod of his head. No elaboration. Where are we? We're far from Novosibirsk, right?
Yes. Galina's estate is outside the city.
How far? That smile twisted a little.
I know what you're doing, and I'm not going to give you that sort of information.
Then what are you doing? I demanded, all of my pent-up fear bursting out as anger. Why are you holding me here? Kill me or let me go? And if you're going to just lock me up and torture me with mind games or whatever, then I really would rather you kill me.
Brave words.
He stood up and began pacing once more.
I almost believe you.
They're true, I replied defiantly. I came here to kill you. And if I can't do that, then I'd rather die.
You failed, you know. On the street.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out when I woke up here. Dmitri made an abrupt turn and was suddenly standing in front of me, moving with that lightning-fast Strigoi speed. My Strigoi nausea had never gone away, but the more time I spent with him, the more it faded to a low-level sort of background noise that I could more or less ignore.
I'm a little disappointed. You're so good, Rose. So very, very good. You and your friends going around and taking down Strigoi caused quite a stir, you know. Some Strigoi were even afraid.
But not you?
When I heard it was you...
He turned thoughtful, eyes narrowing.
No, I was curious, wary. If anyone could have killed me, it would have been you. But like I said, you hesitated. It was your ultimate test of my lessons, and you failed.
I kept my face blank. Inside, I was still beating myself up over that moment of weakness on the street. I won't hesitate next time.
There won't be a next time. And anyway, as disappointed as I am in you, I'm still glad to be alive, of course.
You aren't alive, I said through gritted teeth. God, he was so, so close to me again. Even with the changes to his face, the lean and muscled body was the same. You're dead. Unnatural. You told me a long time ago you'd rather die than be like this. That's why I'm going to kill you.
You're only saying that because you don't know any better. I didn't either back then.
Look, I meant what I said. I'm not playing your game. If I can't get out of here, then just kill me, okay? Without warning, he reached out and ran his fingers along the side of my face. I gasped. His hand was ice cold, but the way he touched me, again, it was the same. Exactly the same as I remembered. How is this possible? So similar, yet so different. All of a sudden, another of his lessons came to mind, about how Strigoi could seem so, so like those you'd once known. It was why it was so easy to hesitate.
Killing you? Well, it's not that simple, he said.
His voice dropped to a low whisper again, like a snake slithering against my skin.
There's a third option. I could awaken you.
I froze and stopped breathing altogether. No. It was the only thing I could say. My brain couldn't come up with anything more complex, nothing witty or clever. His words were too terrifying to even begin to ponder. No.
You don't know what it's like. It's amazing. Transcendent. All your senses are alive. The world is more alive.
Yeah, but you're dead.
Am I?
He caught hold of my hand and placed it over his chest. In it, I could feel a steady beating. My eyes widened.
My heart beats I am breathing.
Yeah, but... I tried desperately to think of everything I'd ever been taught about Strigoi. It's not really being alive. It's dark magic reanimating you. It's an illusion of life.
It's better than life.
Both of his hands moved up and cupped my face. His heartbeat might have been steady, but mine was racing.
It's like being a god, Rose. Strength. Speed. Able to perceive the world in ways you could never imagine. And immortality. We could be together. Forever.
Once that was all I'd ever wanted. And deep inside of me, some part still wished for that. Wished desperately to be with him for all time. Yet, it wouldn't be the way I wanted it. It wouldn't be like it used to be. This would be something different. Something wrong. I swallowed. No. I could barely hear my own voice. Barely even form the words with him touching me like that. His fingertips were so light and gentle. We can't be.
We could.
One of his fingers trailed down the side of my chin and came to rest on the artery in my neck.
I could do it quickly. There'd be no pain. It'd be done before you even knew it.
He was probably right. If you were forced to become Strigoi, you had the blood drained from you. Then, a Strigoi would usually cut himself and bring that blood to your lips. Somehow, I imagined I'd pass out before I was even half drained. Together forever. The world blurred a little. I don't know if it was because of my head trauma or the terror coursing through my body. I had envisioned 100 scenarios when I set out after Dimitri. Becoming a Strigoi hadn't been one of them. Death, his or mine, had been the only thought consuming me, which had been stupid on my part. My sluggish thoughts were interrupted when the door suddenly opened. Dimitri turned, shoving me away hard so that he stood protectively in front of me. 2 people entered, shutting the door before I could even consider running for it. One of the newcomers was a Strigoi, a guy. The other was a human woman carrying a tray, her head bowed down. I recognized the Strigoi immediately. It was hard not to. His face haunted my dreams. Blonde hair, about the length of Dimitri's, hung over the side of a face that looked like he'd been in his early 20s when he turned. He had apparently seen Lyssa and me when we were younger, but I had only seen him twice before. Once had been when I fought him on the Academy's grounds. The other time was when I'd encountered him in the cave that other Strigoi were using as a hangout. He was the one who had bitten and turned Dimitri. The guy barely spared me a glance and instead turned the full force of his anger on Dimitri.
What the hell is going on?
I had no trouble understanding him. He was American.
You're keeping some pet up here?
It's none of your concern, Nathan.
Dimitri's voice was ice. Earlier, I thought he conveyed no emotion in his words. Now I realized it was just more difficult to detect. There was a clear challenge in his voice now, a warning for this other guy to back off.
Galena gave me permission.
Nathan's eyes drifted from Dimitri to me. His anger turned to shock.
Her?
Dimitri shifted slightly, putting himself directly in front of me now. Some rebellious part wanted to snap that I didn't need a Strigoi's protection. Except, well, I kind of did.
She was at the school in Montana. We fought.
His lips curled back, showing his fangs.
I would have tasted her blood if that fire-using Maroi brat hadn't been around.
This doesn't have anything to do with you, replied Dimitri.
Nathan's red eyes were wide and eager.
Are you kidding? She can lead us to the Dragomir girl. If we finish that line off, our names will be legendary. How long are you going to keep her?
Get out, growled Dimitri. That's not the request.
Nathan pointed at me.
She's valuable. If you're going to keep her around as some blood whore plaything, at least share.
Then we'll get the information and finish her.
Dimitri took a step forward.
Get out of here. If you lay a hand on her, I'll destroy you. I will rip your head off with my bare hands and watch it burn in the sun.
Nathan's fury grew.
Galena won't allow you to play house with this girl. Even you don't have that much favor.
Don't make me tell you to leave again. I'm not in a patient mood today.
Nathan said nothing, and the 2 Strigoi stood there in a staring match. I knew Strigoi's strength and power were partially related to age.
Nathan had obviously been turned first. I didn't know by how much, but watching them, I got the feeling that Dimitri might be stronger, or that it was at least a very, very even match. I could have sworn I saw a glimpse of fear in Nathan's red eyes, but he turned away before I could get a good look.
"This isn't over,"
he snapped, moving toward the door.
"I'm talking to Galena."
He left, and for a moment, nobody moved or spoke. Then Dimitri looked at the human woman and said something in Russian. She'd been standing there, frozen. Leaning over, she carefully placed her tray on the coffee table by the couch. She lifted a silver lid up, revealing a plate of pepperoni pizza loaded with cheese. Under any other circumstances, someone bringing me pizza in a Strigoi home would have been ludicrous and funny. Now, in the wake of Dimitri's threat to turn me Strigoi and Nathan's desire to use me to get to Lyssa, nothing was funny. Even Rose Hathaway had limits when it came to making jokes. Next to the pizza was a huge brownie, thick with frosting. Food I loved, as Dimitri well knew.
"Lunch," he said. "Not poisoned."
Everything on the tray looked amazing, but I shook my head.
"I'm not going to eat."
He arched an eyebrow.
"Do you want something else?"
"I don't want anything else because I'm not going to eat anything at all. If you aren't going to kill me, then I'll do it myself." It was occurring to me that the sweet's lack of weapons was probably for my own protection as much as theirs.
"By starving to death?"
There was dark amusement in his eyes.
"I'll awaken you long before then."
"Why aren't you just doing it now?"
"Because I'd rather wait for you to be willing."
Man, he really did sound like Abe, except that breaking one's kneecap seemed kind of softcore in comparison. "You're going to be waiting a long time," I said. Dimitri laughed out loud then. His laughter had been rare as a Dampier, and hearing it had always thrilled me. Now it no longer had that rich warmth that had wrapped all around me. It was cold and menacing.
"We'll see."
And before I could form a reply, he moved in front of me again. His hand snaked behind my neck, shoving me against him, and he tilted my face up, pressing his lips against mine. They were as cold as the rest of his skin, and yet there was something warm in there, too. Some voice in me screamed that this was sick and horrible, but at the same time, I lost track of the world around me as we kissed and could almost pretend we were back together in the cabin. He pulled away as quickly as he'd moved in, leaving me gasping and wide-eyed. Casually, like nothing had happened, he gestured to the woman.
"This is Ina."
She looked up at the sound of her name, and I saw she was no older than me.
"She works for Galena, too, and will check in on you. If you need anything, let her know. She doesn't speak much English, but she'll figure it out."
He said something else to her, and she meekly followed him to the door.
"Where are you going?" I asked.
"I have things to do. Besides, you need time to think."
"There's nothing to think about."
I forced as much defiance into my words as I could. It must not have sounded very fierce, though, because all my speech earned me was one mocking smile before he left with Ina, leaving me alone in my luxurious prison.
Chapter 19. For someone who had preached to Dennis about impulse control, I wasn't setting a very good example. Once left alone in the suite, I continued trying everything possible to get out. Emphasis on the try part. Nathan had acted like keeping a prisoner was a rare thing, but from what I could tell, this place had been built to hold people in. The door and window remained impassable, no matter how hard I beat at them or threw objects against them. I didn't bother with the chair this time, and instead used one of the living room's end tables, hoping it would carry some extra heft. It didn't. When that didn't work, I actually tried entering random codes into the door's keypad. Also useless. Finally, exhausted, I collapsed onto the leather sofa and tried to assess my options. The process didn't take very long. I was trapped in a house full of Strigoi. Okay, I didn't know that for sure, but I knew there were at least three here, which was far too many for me. Dimitri had referred to this place as an estate, which I didn't find comforting. Estates were big. The fact that I appeared to be on the fourth floor was proof of that. A big place meant that there could be lots of room for lots of vampires. The one comfort I had was that Strigoi didn't cooperate very well. Finding large groups of them working together was rare. I'd observed it a couple of times, the attack on the academy being one such occasion. They'd come then because the school's wards had dropped, and that had been a big enough incentive for the Strigoi to unite. Even when they did try to work together, the unions were usually short-lived. The friction I'd observed between Dimitri and Nathan was proof of that. Dimitri. I closed my eyes. Dimitri was the reason I was here. I'd come to free him from this state of living death, and had promptly failed, just